continues to affect, you know, whether or not we're parents or in our relationships, because where we come from sort of has an effect on us. So we're going to start this with a nice song from the Sister Sledge, We Are Family. So, all right, as promised, Love in the 21st Century, hour-long show talking about love and family. It's a vast topic, really. So we're going to be just covering a teeny bit of it here tonight. But if you have something that you want us to talk about, especially in the love and family dynamics, give us a call, 895-1114. If you have something to let us know about, give us a call, 895-1114. You can also find us on the website, Facebook, or KZFR's website. Send us a message. Let us know what you're thinking about. So this is a topic that has been very much alive for me presently. I don't know why it became so big of a topic, but I guess just the revelation that I'm getting older. Not even really that much older, but, you know, that my parents that have, like, basically watched all their children move out of their house, you know, spent their whole livelihoods raising us. And, you know, I have my own observations and judgments about what it was in their decision process. But really just honoring, you know, the work that they did and the time that they devoted to me. And now really at a time in my life where I can take time to reflect on that and be there as a witness to them and be there just to, you know, be a part of their lives is becoming more and more prevalent for me. And so it's given me an opportunity to look at my other friends who are adult children, essentially. I mean, by adult children, I don't mean that we act like children, though that might be very true. But that we are, you know, we are somebody's child. Somebody raised us. And I know, Emily, you brought up the idea of the created family or the family, the friend family, which I think is an important issue I want to touch on. But really, I want to talk about first that initial bond, that initial relationship that we have, that we were brought into. I mean, there is something to be said about this blood relationship we have to people and whether or not we have an established relationship to them and why or why not.
Mm-hmm. Or not blood, right? In cases of adoption and things like
that. Right, right. The people that raised you.
Yeah.
But also, you mean, even that, like, you know, how does that shape, you know, somebody if they're not, if it's not being raised by their blood family? Because at some point there was an internal process that was going on for you, or, you know, judgments going on externally from you about that relationship and having it or not having it. So it starts somewhere. So I guess I just kind of want to hear from you guys what your thoughts are on your adult child relationship, what your relationship is right now with your mom and dad. I mean, like, I can go ahead and start there. I can explain, but I feel like I've been talking for a couple minutes, so
I'll go first.
Okay.
My relationship with my parents is ever evolving.
Yes, mine too.
And that's good. You got to be grateful for that when you feel growth. I've always had the kind of relationship, particularly as a teenager, I was big mouth. Now I'm on a radio show.
Was.
Right?
No coincidences there.
Right. Just kind of always really opinionated around the house, which, you know, led to my early exit of the house.
Was it invited exit?
It was a mutual exit. It was like, well, get out of here while I'm gone, you know?
All right.
And then a few years of separation intentionally, social separation from my family came up to that. But I've always just been really, really honest with my parents to the point where it's like there are lots of things my parents know about my life that people wouldn't tell their parents. But for me, it was more like, well, here's the truth. Here's the information. And over time, we've sculpted a relationship built around honesty and built around those kind of things. And, you know, my stepdad, my very first memory, for instance, was meeting the man who'd become my stepdad. And he raised me as his son. And that having been said, I'm 35 now. It wasn't until about 5 years ago that I actually started calling him dad, you know. So there's a real evolution there. You know, when, you know, you say to a man I only shook hands with most of my life to say, you know, you're my dad, right? And he says, well, you're my son. And then, so it evolves, even as adults, you know, forcing the hug when it wasn't there, you know, as a child, things like that. And same with my mom. You know, we just grow to understand each other more. And, you know, in your late teens, early 20s, there's a lot of blaming going on to your parents. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? I think it's important to understand that a lot of parents, not all, but a lot of parents are really doing the absolute best they can with the tools they have. And my mom had me a month after she turned 18, and she tells people that we raised each other. And that's absolutely accurate.
So. Absolutely. And I think you brought up something interesting, Julian, about how our relationships, you know, you talked about the honesty that you had openly with your family. And it makes, you know, instantly makes me think, you know, Mom, I hope you're not listening too closely to this, that, you know, how honest I wasn't, you know, because of that perceived observation of what your parents are expecting from you. And I feel like, you know, they wanted me to be honest with them, but I didn't feel that. And so that important dynamic that we're building within the relationships to our children to create that safe space to be honest, because that then it travels into our relationships that we have outside of that, our friendships, our, you know, intimate relationships, our business relationships. They all transfer out because this idea of this, like, kind of elephant in the room, dishonesty, is sort of socially acceptable when you're a kid.
Well, I also, you know, knowing that I've established that with my parents, I also know there are some reasons why it was easier for me to do than maybe for some other people. There's not like an inheritance or like a college fund I'm not going to have access to, you know, like it was just honesty for honesty's sake. And I can understand where some people feel they need to keep a part of their lives a secret from their parents, that their parents need to be in a constant state of approval to be continue supporting them or helping them in some way. And that gets a little dicey, but,
right.
You know, and my situation was a little unique, or maybe not incredibly unique, but different.
We all have our own story. And I just also want to point out how it's interesting, because I don't know that any of us in this room have particularly ever had this conversation about our own families.
Yeah.
And really interesting of how it changes how we show up, you know, like all the things that we've experienced in our life affects who we are in this moment. And so now kind of getting to have this like a little bit peek into our own backlog of experiences, it's like, oh, wow. Well, that makes a little bit more sense. Like, yeah, of course Julian was a loud mouth in high school. Like, right. Of course I was the kid that, like, always was talking all the time, you know? It's like, these things, like, okay, this all starts to blend together. I get it. Like, I kind of knew that already, but now I get it a little bit more.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. you know, I also was really honest with my parents, and my parents really respected our space. So growing up, it was unlike a lot of families that we were surrounded by, but my parents, you know, they didn't read journals. They didn't go in our bedrooms. They really, like, honored our space. And that was really powerful. I was a writer from a very young age. And just, you know, knowing that I had that level of privacy in my life made me feel safer, you know. But, yeah, so actually with the honesty thing, my parents got divorced and got back together like 4 times, and then they split up sometimes in between, so it was a little rocky there. And my mom and I developed a relationship very early on that was more friends than mother-daughter, and there were elements of the mother-daughter thing, but for the most part we were friends. And I actually you know, we almost matured in a similar place or pace. And in that, you know, I was actually her support system for a lot of her emotional processes and growth and development through my youth. And it was, you know, not the healthiest thing, which of course I journeyed through, and so did she, you know, as, you know, adults that are like really saw what was happening and, you know, how unhealthy that was. Although it did lead me to be, you know, a coach for women and things like that, which is great. But just, you know, having that more equal relationship and friendship with my mom was really profound for me. And then with my dad, we also had a mutual, you know, move out experience after my parents split. My dad started a new family. So I have two little sisters that are, 10 or 11 and 13, 12, 12 and 14, no, 15 and, 13. I think that's the right one. But anyway,
somewhere in there.
I love them, and they're, I think, teenagers now, and that's scary. So, so once they started their new family, you know, these babies were there, I was about 17, 18 at the time, and there was already kind of that, you know, I was about to try to be leaving family rather than starting a whole new one. And so it was a mutual decision, you know, to leave that house. And so there were rocky roads there for sure in that relationship with my dad, very distant for a long time. And in recent years, it has been, we've just gone through this really beautiful, like, growth and transformation in our relationship where we can see each other more as equals. And and, you know, he travels the world now for his business, or for the business that he works for. And, like, he's in Dubai right now. And, you know, before he left, he texted me, you know, going off to Dubai. I love you. It was just like, thank you. Thank you, Dad. You know, it's so sweet. So things are, you know, always growing and shaping as long as people are maturing, I suppose.
Quick question. Parents texting. Good thing or bad thing?
Good
do we
thing.
Want, do we, are we glad
good
they
thing.
Do?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
way
then
good
I'm out
thing.
Of the loop. My mom doesn't even have a Facebook profile.
Yeah. My mom has a Facebook profile, but the texting, yeah, it's nice because what's coming up for me is my mom wanting me to call her more. And I'm like, you know, the phone works both ways, Mom. You could call me. And so it's nice for the texting because she doesn't want to call me because she knows that sometimes, like, I'm often busy. So she doesn't want to, like, call me in the middle.
Well, she says
texting is in between. What did she say?
Her response would be, the womb doesn't work both ways. I birthed you. That was my effort. Now you need to call.
Ooh.
For me, as a father on the parent side, I love texting my daughter. She just got a phone. She's 10 years old. And I'm able to contact her now very easily. So it's beautiful.
So it works out. Good. Yeah. And then you kind of have this
and
instant
she likes
contact.
It too.
Yeah.
You know, still at this point.
Still at this point, yes.
So, until she's a teenager.
So being the only parent in this room, have you had the cliche, oh, my parents said that, now I get it kind of moment?
Not yet. No. My daughter's 10. My son is 14, and he's coming back soon to stay with me for the summer. I think it's important to me for me to express where my ideas of love came from as a child, and from my grandmother and my mother. The ideas of compassion and love and acceptance came from them. Fear, shame, and guilt came from men in my life where I was abused. And so that created a disconnect for me growing up in foster care as well. It was hard for me to connect with anybody and have that experience of love.
So maybe leaning more towards seeking that from the women in your life in
right,
the future.
Right, of course, women. Yeah. And having a difficult time trusting men in my life as well, you know. And then my mother, she passed away early on when I was 12 years old, so that created a whole like attachment issue with women. So I looked for women in my life to fulfill that maternal role, you know, and kind of be that caretaker for me.
Like in adult relationships.
Right, in yeah. adult relationships later on.
So are you doing anything with your daughter to...
I feel my daughter, you know, we have a beautiful community here and a great village, and I feel like she is supported by so many people in this community, we all are, that she's getting a wonderful, rewarding childhood right now, so... Yeah.
It looks like it, that's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And getting that reflection that you know, maybe aren't getting in one area, but you're getting in multiple areas. So that's kind of the beautiful thing of having that community that you're talking about, is that you have the ability to see the role model and the mentors in everybody that's around you versus trying to find everything in this one particular person.
Mm-hmm.
And something that you were saying, Lee, brought up for me, like the male... to male role and the male to female role, and like how that it's sort of shaped as we're growing up, because as you're saying, you know, you created this sort of, or it was created for you through your experience, it's distrust around men, mm-hmm. because no men really showed up appropriately, mm-hmm. and I feel like that is applicable in our culture very much so for many men to be a certain way. I was having a conversation recently with some friends about this, about how the male role is to be disconnected, is to be unemotional, to be reserved, to be, you know, in somewhere else, just anywhere else but the home, essentially. Like, their role is to be providing. And so there's all these other aspects of the male self that are not being developed, one, in the relationship between the father and the son, or the father and the daughter, or just for that person individually. So I think it's really important that we look at these roles that we are identifying in our society as, this is the father's role, this is the mother's role, this is the men's role, this is the women's role, and how and through that, because that's a lot to take in, those reflection in our community for the children that are growing up, for the people, you know, like here you get a glimmer of like, you know, the... What's a term, like a woman that's balanced with her masculine side, you know, the androgynous representation of being strong but being feminine, and the same thing for a man to be feminine but be children. So yes, your daughter is very blessed to have mm-hmm. such a great community, and so are all of us, because we get to be that reflection to each other.
I think it's important to note that, you know, we got 6,000 years of human civilization and very recently the template for what family means has completely changed. You know, divorce rate, steps, halves, you know, all of that. That's new stuff, new template. And the thing, historically, you know, people are going to look back on these times and, you know, we have no template to go off of. You know, the family unit has changed. Now, you know, double daddy homes, double mom homes, you know, like where... You know, the love part is still there. But when you picture a family, what do you picture? Like, I picture an amorphous thing, something that can shift based on, you know, social context or situation that isn't necessarily the nuclear thing. I know, Tammy, your parents are still together.
Yes.
That's rare.
Oh, I know.
That's really rare. And, you know, that's it's not necessarily wrong. No. I'm saying it's not necessarily wrong for, you know, families to split up and for things to happen.
No.
Like, in my family, something I've noticed that it took me a while to realize is different than other families is that, or a lot of other families. In my family, almost everybody's been married twice or three times, you know? And so there's lots of steps and haves and exes. And, you know, the 4th of July bonfire, everybody shows up. You know, they're all still bound by love. In my family, the family is the social group, is the friend group. There's not very many people that are friends of my family, just kind of are on the periphery. It's pretty much the family. So you'll see at the Thanksgiving table, ex-wives, ex-husbands with new wives and new husbands and new families all sharing meals together. So as, you know, growing up myself and entering the dating world, you know, what do you mean you don't want to be friends after we dated? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. You know, like that,
right.
We cared for each other and now you don't want to know who I am. And, you know,
I wasted all that time getting to know you.
Exactly. Like, huh?
No, I feel really, really feel wasted.
And I learned that that's the exception, not the rule, is that often, more often people just, you know, move on. They close someone off from their life or they rarely talk to their, you know, and I can't imagine being married to somebody and then not speaking to them.
Yeah.
Right. And a future date. That's just very strange to me. You know,
it's definitely something that gets developed in that, you know, in that relationship, whether or not it's capable of having the relationship afterwards. And Jenny, friends after spending so much time together, it speaks to where they both are independently of that relationship and why their relationship got to that place. But talking about the fact that my parents are still married does bring up a lot of, you know, what I was kind of creating the idea for at the beginning of the show, the beliefs it shapes in our lives about relationships. I was talking with one of my friends recently about the intention I bring to relationships. When I'm in a relationship, like, it's really a personal self-growth process. And so for me and my family, my parents still being married, my mother's from Costa Rica and my father has had Parkinson's my entire life. And so they're growing together and living together and being married together was an intentional practice for both of them. It's not because it didn't get hard and it didn't get difficult and there wasn't those times when you're just like, man, like, you know, there might be another road out of here. But, you know, it has affected me in my own process of, like, the intention I bring to relationships. Like, I don't just have relationships to have relationships. Like, it's an intentional practice to see my own personal growth through it. I mean, and then it's remembering all those other challenges that come up through that process and really the modern reality that we're living in, like you're saying, Julian, and like how many different possibilities are out there and how things are okay, you know, to shift and to change. It's like metamorphosing that in within myself because you're shifting this model that you've been raised with culturally and socially and spiritually in my home to, like, how does that wrap and work with the world we're living in now? And do I really agree with the world we're living in now? Like, gosh, are there things in this world that I'm like, man, maybe if you tried a little bit harder, if you just tried 1% harder to understand what the other person is feeling in your relationship, maybe you would have gotten somewhere else. Maybe you would have gotten to a nice meadow instead of a cliff. You know what I mean?
Well, you remember my theory that often it's the partner holding you back from change by demanding it all the time. And that's,
if that's what they're doing. Yeah.
And so often, I mean, maybe other people have noticed too. I just have that after a relationship ends, it's like both parties end up going on to do the very things their partners asked them to do in the first place. Smoke less, drink less, be more health conscious. It's like as soon as they break up, they immediately start doing the things their partner wanted to do.
Because they know it was good for them, but they're just so resistant to being told by anyone else because the parents used to scold us and tell us what to do, and nobody likes that.
Nobody likes
Everybody's responding to that inner child going, don't you tell me what to do.
If you didn't have a good relationship with your parents, I suppose. I mean, right? Because, like, for me, like, my parents, like, and that, you know, it brings me to the something I want to talk about here soon after we listen to some wise words from Hightower. So this will give you guys some time to think about it. But how our relationship is now with our parents, like how it has affected, because we've kind of a little bit touched on that of what, you know, are you still the child in the relationship? Are you still the one, like, getting scolded and told? And why, if you're not, is that still affected in your relationships? Because that's what you just were saying, is that in a relationship, when somebody's telling you what to do, it reminds you of being the child. But if you're not the child anymore, Why is it still affecting you as though you're the child? You don't get to answer
well,
yet.
I'm not
okay.
saying that words are affecting you. Okay.
When the going got tough, Barack got in a huff, then he got gruff. President Obama has worked himself into such a tizzy over the TPP that he's lashing out at his progressive friends in Congress. He's mad because they refuse to be stereotypical lemmings, following him over this political cliff called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It masquerades as a free trade agreement, but such savvy and feisty progressive senators as Sherrod Brown, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren have ripped off the mask, revealing that TPP is not free, not about free to. It's a stealth power grab, written in top-secret negotiations by and for multinational corporations from the U.S. and 11 other nations. It effectively empowers these profiteering corporate giants to overrule actions by the governments of any of these countries, including ours, that protect consumers, workers, the environment, and other interests from corporate abuse. Why an American president, especially a Democrat, would embrace this private usurpation of our people's sovereignty is a mystery. But the great majority of congressional Democrats are not going along. So he's been publicly scolding them as though they're disobedient children, huffily whining that they're playing politics, whooping on me, and making up, quote, stuff about how this deal allows corporations to challenge and even change American laws. Yet, rather than offer any evidence that they're making stuff up, Obama has gruffly made up stuff about them. By opposing the TPP, he prevaricated in a recent speech, the Democrats are anti-trade and want to, quote, pull up the drawbridge and build a moat around ourselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a pathetic show of presidential petulance. It's time for Obama to question himself, not his friends.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
All right. I think that was an appropriate amount of time to meditate on that, the question, right, guys? How is it that when we are in these relationships, you know, and again, this can be friendship relationships. It could be still in your parent relationship because, you know, many of us still have relationships with our parents. And if we are not, if we have outgrown that role, if we're like, I am not, you know, like, I'm an independent being, therefore the words that you say, such as, wear your seatbelt, why does it affect us as the child? Why are we interpreting it, you know, as that role when we've, in a sense, to ourselves, identified as being the independent being?
Well, because I think that we all have, we continually host kind of all ages within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we are always, you know, there will always be an infantile element that loves to be held and cuddled and snuggled and kissed. There will always be, and maybe a teen, inner adult, you know, and we project our inner adult maybe most of the time. But when we're in private or with our partners, we can soften into some of these maybe less socially acceptable versions of ourselves. That would be my theory.
Less socially acceptable versions of ourselves.
Yeah, the pissed off teenager, which, you know, some people totally rock.
Yeah, I think that it comes to talking about presence, though, too, because what you're reminding me, Emily, is that, yes, we've got those many different levels within us, you know, the child, the adult, and then what would be considered, like, the super ego, which is, like, the self that is able to, like, supersede this idea of, you know, the experience and see what we're needing from that experience, what we are, something we talked about a little bit last week when we were talking with Jonah about NBC, like, what are you really needing in that situation? Why are you wanting to react as the child? What is coming up for you? For me, for example, like, my mom, something she would say to me is, like, sip up your backpack. Like, riding my backpack, riding around town, inevitably there's at least one that is always unzipped or something. And my mom says this to me, I swear, every time I see her.
Still,
yeah. And it's taken me a while to transcend, to just be like, why are you telling me what to do? Like, it's a zipper, for gosh sake. Like, does it really matter? And for me, it, you know, it's realizing, oh, like, she's needing to feel like I'm taken care of. She feels like this, like, it goes into her belief patterns behind our relationship. So when I have the presence and I'm not in this, like, fury of, like, I'm just trying to get to my next place. Why are you bringing this up right now? then I can actually have a more dynamic relationship.
Well,
with
and
her.
A more compassionate is what it sounds like. It sounds like in that when you have the space and time to, you know, reflect on what's actually happening, kind of underneath it all, that you can, you know, tap into your own compassion.
Absolutely.
For yourself and for your mom.
Right. But and yeah. For me, that's that presence. It's really because right. I am, because for my practice is to be that individual, independent adult 95% of the time. You know, I mean, 100% might be a little bit overachieving, but 95% of the time, I'd like to be in my present self, not reacting to the space and time that is happening around me. And that happens all the time. You know, that teenager can come out in the bank when somebody's like taking too long and they're on their phone and they don't move up to the line fast enough, right? So it's like that presence. And in those relationships, like you're talking about, where it comes out in our partnerships and our closest relationships most easily, is I feel like the place that we get to control it the most. Mm-hmm. So if we learn how to be present in those relationships, which often are the most reactive, then we can be more present in the not like the ethereal or extra relationships that we have.
I think another challenge that a lot of parents tend to forget is that your children are supposed to outdo you. Genetically, that's the plan. Evolution, that's the plan. You know, social evolution is a thing as well. I'm already at that point in my life where I'm like, catch myself thinking of the kids these days. They're, like, their music, things they're talking about at 15, I didn't talk about that, and the gadgets they have, why don't they go outside and play? Like, I'm going through all that, you know. And, you know, the thing is, no, that is one of the issues in the parent-child relationship, is particularly in modern times, you're growing up in wildly different times. Mm. You know, so as a teenager, I knew my grandparents had no idea what they were talking about when it came to like what to do at school, you know, how to be social, things like that. They just the jump is just too big.
That's why you don't want to be an old dad.
You know, that's why I don't want
to. He's destined to be
that's a private conversation we're now having on the air.
Okay, so before we get into where your comment just talked me, Julian, I'm going to invite our caller into the conversation. Are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. You want to let us know who you are and where you're calling from?
Yeah, my name is Laosha, and I'm actually from Chico. I just wanted to let you guys know that I've been through a few relationships, and I didn't come from, like, a fantastic upbringing or anything like that, but I'm a very curious person by nature. And I think that one of the reasons that, like you guys were saying, the different personalities that we kind of have in our own selves, the different levels of maturity that we have, comes from our experiences. And so sometimes we might be in a new experience, but it supposedly is a relationship. So all you have to go from is what you've already learned. So if you haven't learned a whole lot of really great reinforcement and a lot of really great emotional experiences, I guess, for lack of better phrasing, basically you're going to go back on what you know.
Absolutely.
Like that's all you know.
Absolutely.
And so you're still learning.
Yeah, you're definitely experiencing and doing what you've been role modeled. And so if what you've experienced the most is a certain type of relationship in a certain type of way, then of course, like there, unless there's a better example out there, very few of us are going to do anything different than what we experience, whether or not that's the right thing or not. It goes into a conversation I was having with a friend of mine at a wedding the other day about the relationships, like, we don't even necessarily know we're in a bad relationship sometimes because we are so used to the negative role model of a relationship, you know, or just like the unhealthier versions of a relationship. And so really one of the reasons to have this show is to help people realize like all these kind of perplexing questions and realities and beliefs and things that we have to deal with on a daily basis, aside from just do the like worldly things that we have to do, like pay our bills and drive places, you know. So this is thank you for calling and letting us know, you know, where you're coming from.
Definitely. It all basically goes back into reconditioning. You know, each experience is basically that.
Yes.
You know, what's interesting to me is when that process doesn't really happen, like when a child growing up can see from a distance the, you know, the bad choices or whatever, bad, you know, quotes around it, the choices that their parent is making that are maybe that they don't want to replicate as adults.
Right.
They identify that. And then they just go and follow it. That's an interesting thing when that happens, because there's the self-awareness to recognize what's happening and the desire to not repeat that pattern. But then somehow, that just happens. And you know, the self-awareness is there to see that it's happening on some level.
So that goes.
Yeah,
this
definitely.
Goes,
and see, it's really interesting to me because, my mom has been pretty negative the majority of my life, and I've always strived for acceptance and love from her. So I would modify or do the best I could with the things that she was what she gives to me, skills wise, or she loves great music, hence us listening to your awesome station. And she really introduced me to your guys' station. I wouldn't have known about it. We do quilting and stuff like that too, so it's kind of that's where I get my acceptance now. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting to see how going through life, with this specific person who's supposed to be your primary conditioner, I guess, from the beginning, really does affect you. And I can honestly tell you that I've caught myself acting in emotionally unstable ways here and there, the ways that she would, just because I think that it had been... literally shown to me so many times.
Right.
So until you learn it on your own, you might just do that as a norm. Yeah.
Default.
Absolutely.
A default. Thank you. Perfect.
Our parents show us what to be and what not to be. Mm-hmm. And in truth, everybody does that.
Right.
But our parents probably most so. I mean, in a typical situation. But I think what happens when it comes to repeating energies that we maybe shared with our parents is that we kind of fall into that it was good enough for my dad, it was good enough for my mom, and that's when that acceptance stuff comes in, and I feel like with each passing generation there's a lot more of that's not good enough for me, and that's that was good enough for my parents. But again, I think that has a lot to do with how much society changes every 10, 20 years at this point. But, there's still my parents, went through this. So why can't my parents drink and smoke? So I'm going to drink and smoke because it was good enough for them and they turned out all right.
Or my parents had kids and a family. Maybe
and
I should.
What were they thinking?
I mentioned my mom had four kids by the age of 23.
I am finally passing the age that my mom had her last kid.
Yeah.
So
and
same here. I didn't think about that.
My sisters were teen moms as well because that's what their mom did, and my grandmother was a teen mom because that's what her mother did, and it becomes acceptable to some degree, but.
Something that comes to mind too, Laosha, with what you're saying about the, your role in helping your mother kind of see the things that she needed to see. What's interesting is that I feel like if parents in general took a different approach to their parenting, as that they're learning the same things or learning at the same time as having a child, then they might take their role a little bit differently about the conditioning of their children, because sometimes the conditioning that we're used to, like what Julian was saying, well, it's okay for my mom and dad to do that. It was okay for my mom. Look at how I turned out. I turned out pretty okay. I guess it's okay to reprimand my children this way. Instead of looking at it like, okay, that was the best option at the time, looking at it as an opportunity to go, is this the way I want to impact my child's life? Is this the way that I want to be impacted by this decision? How is this? Really taking it as a learning opportunity, as a moment in time where you get to experience maybe what your parents were trying to figure out.
You know what? A practice that came to me at some point through somehow that I really, really like is adding a question mark to the end of things that you would have judgments going through your head. So instead of stating this judgment, just add a question mark. That was a really messed up way of doing that. That was a really messed up way of doing that? was it?
Where
did that come from? Why am I responding this way?
Something that was coming up.
Really smart to actually. Sorry, I'm
go ahead.
Okay, I think it's really, really smart to be able to actually the whole energy thing. It's like we're all, biologically from our mother and our father, whether they're there or not. So somewhere in there, inherently, I guess you could say, we might tend to bring forth a certain type of energy, or it might not be ours directly, but it might be in there molecularly, I guess.
Mm, absolutely.
So, collective energy.
I think that that's really, really interesting that you guys kind of brought that up, due to the fact that basically that's when you go out into the world, you kind of learn who you are, what, you know, affects you in what ways. And so I think it's actually very awesome that you guys have this show on, because I learn a lot from it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Awesome. We think it's pretty awesome, too. Yeah. I want to share this three-step process awareness that I want, that I practice myself, which is awareness, acceptance, action. So we become aware of things in our lives, like what affects us and what doesn't affect us. We finally have this, like, these aha moments where it's like, oh, I am becoming like my mom and dad, or oh, I did do that, I did react that way, and that wasn't very empowering or in very enlightened being of me. So I'm aware of it. That's who I am. And then there's another step of accepting who that truly is, like what Julian was saying about what was okay for certain ones, our parents or for those that were around us conditioning us, like accepting, like, I accept that that is a part of me. Whether or not I accept that that is who I'm going to continue to be, I'm accepting that I have the capability and or the lack of awareness in certain moments to be that person. I'm not going to deny it anymore. I'm not going to pretend like it's not there. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and be like, oh, no, I'm totally like this present person all the time. Like, you know, there's all those aspects of ourselves like we were talking about. And the last one is action. What are you gonna do about it? Like, that's where, you know, as they say, the rubber meets the road. Like, what are you going to do about it? Are you gonna be like, well, I can't really do anything about it because that's the way I was raised? Or are you gonna take that step further to do, you know, to be that present moment, to start quilting with your mom because it's a more positive experience to be having with her? Or are you just gonna play into the game because maybe she doesn't have any other tools, but you do? So that's my little internal process.
That right there seems like I don't know, we should probably give a memo to the Chico people who are not able to listen at this moment. Just that.
Thank you.
Fantastic. You guys have a great rest of your show. I'll be listening. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
All right. So something I wanted to close the show with talking about, unless there, I mean, we're not closing. I just wanted to.
I got one more concept that I want to throw out there. Potential conversation. I'm not sure. But it's this idea that love goes down. So like we can like, so the idea is that, you know, when you look up towards your parents and the genetic line, and you have this love for your parents, of course, inherently born into you for the most part. And that love can have a certain capacity for you, you know, but then when you become a parent, the different kind of love that comes out of being a parent, and remember that I am not a parent, you know, is supposed to be, you know, something super extreme and like, you know, like you will die for this thing that you gave birth to or whatever. And, you know, you'll like just change your entire life to, you know, take care of this thing and all that. And the level of love that goes into being a parent, whether or not with or without consciousness, just biologically, the love there is different than the love for your parents, and it can make you appreciate what your parents have gone through more, you know, and identify with them more, have more compassion and sympathy for, you know, what they dealt with, especially in those first 6 months, maybe, you know, but or maybe the birthing process, but the concept is that love goes down, and so that it gets more and more potent, you know, the further down it goes. And anyway, just wanted to throw that there. There is a conversation topic.
Absolutely. And you know what it brings to mind for me is what Julian was saying about the idea of evolution is that we get better, you know, that we are a better product of our, of, you know, those that created us. And so when I look at it that way and I combine what you're saying, Emily, it comes to that, you know, yeah, then like the role model that I can be for the children that are in my life, because I'm not a parent, but I feel like we are all parents or mentors in some level. Like we are all at some place showing those around us that are, you know, younger than us, whether that's younger by a few years or younger by many years, or even those that are older than us that just haven't experienced the same things. Like we can choose to be that presence and that deeper level of love that you're talking about, Emily, like that true compassion in the moment when you're like, really, you're going to have compassion right now? Like normally people be like freaking out, you know, but it's a choice that it gets better with each one of us. So if we have that concept instead of that judgment of, well, my parents were, you know, this was good enough for them, so I can continue to behave this way. then when we show up a little bit better.
Another thing to consider is, particularly first time parents, a lot of parents are parents unexpectedly.
Good point.
You know, they just all of a sudden, oh, now this is happening. Okay, well, here we go. And they've done the absolute best they can. But some people are just not built to be good parents. Some people are too selfish. Some people are, you know, and it's important to not blame your parents if you ended up with one of those, you know. And they go, well, you know, I love you. I accept you. I know you did the absolute best you could. I know you gave up a lot of your life to take care of me and love me and provide for me, you know. But, you know, we hold all our parents to some kind of standard.
A high one.
It should be like this. It should be like that. It should be like this. But really, it's most of us were accidents in the first place, and they're just responding to that fact.
You know, Julian, I had to do that with my father. I didn't meet him until I was 12 years old, and he was in prison my entire life. And I had to, when I was 33, I met him again, and I brought my son with me, and he's completely institutionalized, it, still in and out of prison even now. And that was really difficult for me to have to let that go, but I was able to tell him that I loved him, I appreciated him, I knew that things in life don't always go the way that you want, but also I had to let him go and let him live his life, because I didn't need that in my life.
Yeah.
Right. Or my son's life either. Well,
I grew up without I had a father figure, but not a father, so to speak. And I got to a point in my life where it was like, you know what? I don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
I had went so long training myself and teaching myself like the bigger picture that, you know, as a grown adult, it's like, I don't have a need for that, you know, as much.
You know, my mom said something to me once. My dad was pretty absent throughout my life as well. And, you know, and yet in my first few years, I was daddy's girl as a baby. And then like some, you know, pre double digit time, you know, he broke off. And so then after that, I was like, oh my God, what happened to the love for my dad? You know, so I was always trying to get that love from my dad. And, love and approval. And so I went to college for like, you know, a year and a half or something, you know, doing the whole college thing, trying to do the path that, you know, he would, you know, approve of. And at one point I was driving out to school and I was on the phone with my mom and I was just like, I hate my life. You know, like I feel horrible, you know, all this stuff. And I didn't want to be going to school. I didn't want to be going to college. I didn't feel like that was right for me. And she just said to me on the phone, you know, one of the ways you're going to know when you're an adult is when you stop caring so much about what your father thinks. And in that moment, I just went, whoa.
That's a good truth.
Thanks for the reality check. And I quit. And I lived, you know, well, my life is incredible. And, you know, and I've revisited, you know, I've self-educated and revisited. What the point is, though, is that, you know, you do get to a point where it's like, you just have to let go and break free from the ideas that you hold around your parents, the expectations for what they're supposed to be in your life, and just let them be who they are. Because as you become an adult, you realize that these people are just people.
People too.
They have their own lives separate from you and had way, you know, decades of history prior to you being in their lives.
Yeah. It reminds me of something I said to my mom recently. You know, I was having a particularly ecstatic day. I was driving somewhere with my mom, and I said, you know, I just want to thank you. She's like, what do you want to thank me for? It's like, I want to thank you for giving birth to me, because I'm pretty stoked on my life right now. It's pretty amazing. And I just want to let you know that, like, thanks for doing all that work, like raising me. I know it wasn't easy. So the same thing, being able to have the same conversation with my dad, where I think it was a really genuine moment for them to be like, wow, you look pretty happy too. Like they were like, wow, like you're not just like trying to say this because it's Mother's Day or saying this because it's Father's Day, which by the way, I did not do anything for. Oops. Sorry,
yeah,
mom.
I know.
but like a really genuine expression of like, thank you, like, for all the real hard work that you did. Because I really feel like there is a, because of my spiritual practice in life, I feel like there's an intentional reason that we are connected to the people that brought us into this world. And on a blood level, as well as on an energetic level, the people that we meet, there's a reason for all that. I mean, I don't know what those reasons are, but I mean...
Why not, Tammy?
I know. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm getting back to work. But what that purpose really is for each one of us, I feel like there's truths in each moment. So before we have to close and segue out of onto Ecotopia, which is coming up next with Susan and Steve, I just want to hear maybe one, just highlight one moment, some few words of truth from you about your parent-child relationship, like in this moment, or something that you've experienced through your life growing up. What is your principle that you've carried from your parents? It can be from one of your parents, it can be from both of your parents, but somebody that has helped shape your life.
I could say that pride has been important for me in my relationship with my parents. I'm proud of what they've done. And as a teenager, I was like, all you've done is buy property and built a house. That's all you've done with your lives. And now I'm like, oh man, if I had property to build a house on, that would be fantastic. So I'm really proud of the fact that they got us out of the trailer park, you know, and got us to some country property and worked really hard for that. And I tell them I'm proud of them when I see them. And I don't see my parents but every few years. And they make a point of telling me at some point in a visit, at least once, that they're proud of me as well. And I think that, you know, seeking parental approval, you get a lot of it when you have your parents say, I'm proud of you. Like, that's it. It's just that simple. And it's like, oh, really? Because I've been working 10 years for you to be proud of me. It's like, well, yeah, of course I am. It's just one simple sentence. But it means something very specific. So
I know.
Having pride both ways.
As uncomfortable to admit as that is, right?
Yeah.
It feels good. I've been fortunate to hear that a lot from my parents.
Oh,
It's good to drop jaws, too. When your parents are like, whoa, like, that's hard to do. The older you get, to get your parents, like, totally shocked at something really cool you did. That's hard.
You know, for me, I'm very thankful for my foster parents that took me in when I was 10 years old and really helped to show me the other side of that, show me the light of the darkness that I experienced the first 10 years of my life. You know, they took in this crazy wild kid that ran away from every foster home he ever went to and, like, showed me love and compassion and strength. I'm very fortunate to have foster parents that I call mom and dad to this day that I'm able to have an open, honest conversation with and not have to be afraid of their judgments or anything like that. I wish I could see them more, though.
But let's make it happen.
Yeah.
And I actually, I'm grateful that my mom is, I can say easily say she's one of my best friends, and I'm one of hers, so that's amazing. And with my dad, it's, as I felt rejected by my dad, I rejected my dad, you know, growing up. Mm. And, I blamed him, you know, in ways for, like, pulling away or being absent or overworking, really. I saw him as a workaholic. And, but what I, as an adult, have gleaned is that he wasn't just overworking. The man was ambitious as all heck. And
I don't know anybody like that.
And this is what I'm saying. And there have been, as he's gotten older and I've gotten older, I've realized how much I'm like him. And
thanks, Dad.
Julie and I were just talking about this today. My dad, in my youth, was he worked for UPS and FedEx, great companies. And, you know, this is where he started. And again, now he works for, like, this global corporate company analyzing businesses and traveling the world. He was in Brazil 2 weeks ago. He's in Dubai right now. And just seeing where his ambition has taken him in his life, I'm really grateful for that role model, even if I rejected it for a large portion of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's always lessons to be learned. Thinking about it and listening to you guys, it's like some of that Lee, you just, like, pulled right out of, you know, I was totally energetically resonating on the same things about strength and compassion. Like, that's definitely, like, the two things that I think about when it comes to my parents is strength and compassion. Having compassion for each other, having compassion for the situation that they were living, and having the strength to persevere through it. So, like, those are definitely things that my parents that you know, embodied and taught me through not their words so much as their actions. And I feel really blessed to have had that as a role model. Silliness. My mom is one of the silliest people that I know. And really just like, you know, to the point she dresses up on every holiday. She puts things around the house that are super silly and has, I think, helped my dad embrace more of his silliness because she's so silly. Like, she just is doing the weirdest thing sometimes, and it's really helped me to realize, you know, that no matter how bad the struggle gets, because it can get really bad, like the more you can laugh about the situation you're in and the more you can distract yourself from what's really like really just like bothering you more than like hurting you, then the better things are going to get. And love, like, I feel like, you know, for all the things that went down in our house and those four walls, you know, whatever, how many walls it were, that I really knew that my parents loved me. And that's what I feel like really what it comes down to, is that the children that we are raising in this community and abroad and around the world, is that they need to know that they are loved by the people that are around them. And that's really what's going to help carry on. So what are you grateful for the people that helped raise you? What can you thank them for today? And what can you help to impart into these young minds that are growing up around you? Seems like a worthy homework for anybody that's listening. Mm-hmm. Before we get off the air, Julian, you want to segue into our song here?
I like to play the Ana DeFranco songs. And so this is an Ani song specifically about all we've been talking about this whole hour. It's about her relationship with her parents, and it's called Not Angry Anymore.
So thank you so much, Emily Rose, Julian, and Lee Dent for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, as always.
Always.
Yay, Tammy.
Tammy.
Ecotopia is coming up next, and they're going to be discussing environmental issues with nationally renowned authors and activists. EcoTalk, it's our local link to a global network of folks who know and care about the health of our planet. Okay.
Time we fight, cold wind blows our way, but we can learn like the trees how to bend, how to sway and say I think I understand what all this fighting is for, baby. I just want you to understand.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And we're now also being broadcast over KCMG.